Good morning. This is John.
Good morning.
Anybody
John.
Else online?
Yeah, this is Bethany.
Good morning, Bethany.
How you
Peter's
doing?
Here.
Good morning, Peter. Things are good up north, Bethany. About 10 below this morning, so it's warmed up a bit. And I think as soon as the meeting is done, Judy and I are going to head for our cabin.
Well, you know, that's why you have cabins, right? Just for that for that chance. If it's going to be cold, you might as well go somewhere cozy and enjoy Alaska.
That's right.
How are you, Peter?
I'm doing good, thanks. It's not 10 below here, but it's been plenty cold for my taste.
Hey, guys, this is Bud. I just signed in.
Good morning, Bud.
Hi.
We're just discussing the standard weather reports from around the country.
Well, you got rain in Juneau.
I was there, Thursday night, and it was sure slushy.
It's just gross.
Yeah, it was tough. Has Eagle Crest been open at all?
I don't think so. You know, it snowed a few times, and there is, you know, there's snow on the ground, but I don't think it's been open yet.
I don't know what's been the status of ski resorts around the country. Are they shut down or open, or does anybody know?
Don't know. There's
not really.
Yeah, you were saying, Bud, and no reason to shut it down?
No, I was just saying there's no consistent reason from one place to another whether stuff is open or not.
Let's see, do we have other board members on?
Good morning, everyone. It's Nicole.
Oh, great, Nicole. Good morning. How about Melanie?
I don't know if she was ever sent the call-in number, and I want to thank Bud for forwarding it to me. I didn't get the call-in number or a meeting packet or anything like that.
Well, I know I did, and on the agenda, it's got the call-in number is right at the top. That's what I used. Peter, I know you sent those out.
That's what I'm just checking here. Let me resend that, Nicole. See?
Yeah, that's funny. I have an agenda, but it doesn't have the call-in number on it, so I must get different things somehow.
See here. I'm going to send you a packet right now, Nicole. It's just two pages, but I don't know why you wouldn't have gotten it yesterday.
So I went back and I looked at Bud's thread. Thank you again, Bud, for sending this. And it looks like you started to use my redistricting address, and the same with Melanie. And I'm not sure.
I see that. Yes. Yeah, I switched to the new email system, and it auto-fills those. And it just has your name, and then it turns out it's going to the wrong address, I see. Okay, let me do that with Melanie here. I've got the same thing in there.
Yeah, Peter, I have not picked up the board computer yet, so I'm still on my
So there's going to be – yeah, I'm going to have to be – somehow I have to get the system to stop auto-filling you guys when I type your name. So let me see if I can get packets. Well, I apologize that you didn't get a packet. Thankfully, it's a simple one. But,
so,
The email that I sent that had my, I think the subject might have been availability, should have had everybody's correct email addresses. So if you want to just go from that email and save those as contacts, that then you should be able to choose those email addresses. That way you don't have to type them in fresh.
Yeah, right. Okay, so I just sent Melanie to her Spark address, packet, and agenda. John, would you like me to try and send a text to Melanie?
Sure. You can.
Okay. I guess, actually, I don't think.
If you've got her cell number.
Oh, gosh, I don't know that I do. Actually, I don't believe I have a cell number for her yet.
So I wonder if she's been. Nicole, is this the first communication you've gotten about the meeting today? Bud, did you get the packet and agenda, did you say, or you hadn't received it either?
I got the packet yesterday afternoon at my old email address. So I got that, but it sounds, and then I got the agenda Thursday afternoon. But I also didn't have anything with the call-in number until I asked Peter for it.
Yeah, and then Nicole had asked me to add the call-in numbers to the agenda, which is a great idea, so I'm going to do that moving forward. But that newer version of agenda... I added the call-in numbers to the top of the agenda, and we'll do that on forthcoming agendas as well. I think it's a great idea so members don't have to scramble for those numbers.
I just texted Melanie the call-in number and asked her if she was joining us.
Hi, this is Melanie.
Oh.
Can you hear me?
Hi, Melanie.
Well,
sorry for the confusion. Apparently, Peter had sent out the board packet to our Alaska redistricting board address. It autofilled when he got the redistricting computers, autofilled in our redistricting addresses. So I think some don't have that set up yet on their computer. So I think that was the confusion.
Yeah, I just now was able to pull up my packet, but I apologize for being late. My son's checking in at Alaska Airlines in Anchorage right now, and we're having some issues with his tote, so he called. And anyways, my apologies for being late.
Is Bethany on?
Yes, I've been on for a while, so yes. And Peter, okay. I just sent you Melanie's cell so that you'll have that as well for the future.
Oh, thank you.
So, Melanie, do you have the agenda and the board packet there now?
I do have it now.
Okay, and Nicole, do you have it as well?
I do.
Bud and Bethany, you have everything in front of you?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, why don't we go ahead and call the meeting to order. It's 10:09, and our apologies for being late to anybody from the public that's online as well. Now, we need to first establish that we have a quorum present, and I'll call the roll, and then each of you can acknowledge that you're here since we're doing this via teleconference. Melanie Banky?
I'm here.
Nicole Borromeo?
Here.
Bethany Markham?
Here.
Bud Simpson?
Here.
And John Binkley, and I'm present as well. We have a draft agenda that was sent out, and would look for a motion to adopt the agenda.
So moved. This is Bethany.
Is there a second on the motion?
Second.
Okay, so I think Bethany Markham made the motion and Bud Simpson seconded the motion, if I've got that right. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any additions, deletions, changes that members wish to make to the agenda? Is there any objection to adopting the agenda as presented? Hearing none, the agenda is adopted. First item on the agenda really is a general discussion with our executive director. I think I don't know that all of us have met Peter in person. Unfortunately, through this process, we had to conduct all of our interviews through video conferencing, which was better than just teleconferencing, but certainly short of in-person meetings. But such are the times that we're in, and we're going to have to go forward with what we've got. I thought maybe we could just start with a general discussion talking about some of the items that Peter had put together, some of the things that he sees coming at us that we can be thinking about. Peter doesn't officially go to work for the board until Monday, but he has been doing quite a bit of work prior to that in preparation. So maybe, Peter, I can turn it over to you and you can kind of walk through some of these things, and we can have a broad-ranging discussion with the board about what we see ahead and what some of the decision points we have coming at us.
Well, certainly. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and good morning, board. We do have a number of items that are on my kind of punch list of first things that we should be looking at. But as a brief background, I've spoke with attorneys who were involved in the previous process, and they always make this point that because the board is constitutionally created, what rules and statutes apply to us is just not a well-defined matter of law. That's the term they use, not a well-defined matter of law. But it's certainly my intention that, you know, I'm going to follow all the rules that would apply to any state entity. For example, with, you know, sexual harassment workplace training would be just one example of that. I don't see any reason not to do the things that we would do in any other state agency in regards to that. So that sort of umbrella applies to a lot of these things. You know, what procurement rules apply to us? Well, you know, we should just adopt some because it's not clear. So just starting down the list and, you know, just hitting some high points. For example, as a legislative employee in the past, we have mandated sexual harassment and workplace environment training at the beginning of every session, and it's in person, required. It's a many-hour thing. You sign a logbook, and then that that meets the requirements for the legislative branch. So it occurred to me that, hey, session is starting, and if we end up hiring a couple people, maybe we could piggyback on the legislative process and save the cost of trying to go out to a contractor to provide this training. So I reached out to Skiff. He was there at Human Resources with Legislative Affairs. He was very generous in offering that, yes, we could piggyback with other legislative employees when they do training in the middle of January, third and fourth weeks of January. But he also extended that and said that he would be willing to set up a dedicated session for board staff, and, of course, board members would be invited to join if they wanted to, and that the training isn't just the usual workplace environment training. It also would include a component that's specific to the Alaska legislative ethics law that applies to all legislative employees. Again, that may not apply to us, but knowing what those baseline rules are, I think, is good for the staff to understand that they can't just accept gifts from people, that there's some parameters there that need to be respected. So that's on that topic, what I'm thinking. And I can, if any board members have thoughts on that, I can go further.
Okay, thanks, Peter. Any thoughts or comments, questions from board members on that item?
Mr. Chair,
Bud, I appreciate the suggestion.
Oh, go ahead, Bud. Sorry.
That's the problem with these teleconferences. And as an aside, I wish we could do these by Zoom or a Windows version that we used before, because it's easier to avoid talking over each other and to avoid those long pauses when John asks for a motion and nobody's sure who should go first. So just my two cents worth on that. Anyway, I just wanted to say Peter has brought up a lot of issues here that I really hadn't thought of myself, and I appreciate him doing that. I think it's a good idea, and we ought to schedule ourselves to go through some of these training things.
Okay, thank you, Bud, and I couldn't agree with you more. It is awkward on a straight teleconference line, and hopefully that's one of the first things Peter can do is to get us organized into having our meetings at a minimum on video conferencing. Melanie, was that you that had a comment as well?
Yeah, this is me. I'm willing to go through whatever training. And Peter, I'm glad that you're willing to go through some training. I guess my main concern is, will this training include information on maintaining confidentiality on sensitive subjects? I think that would be very helpful.
Peter, do you know if there's any component within that that talks or speaks to that?
Not that I recall. I've done the training, I believe, three different sessions, and it focuses on mainly the workplace environment, where, you know, understanding the power dynamic between, someone who has supervisory authority over someone else and recognizing those sort of the power relationships is generally what it focuses on. And then the ethics part is mostly about receiving gifts, where there would be some implication of quid pro quo kind of thing. But we can certainly, reach out and find any other trainings that the board desires.
Okay, I think that might be a good idea. Melanie, he'll look for some component that might touch on some of those areas you mentioned.
Thank you. And in terms of receiving gifts, or if that's the main focus of it, I don't think there's any implication of quid pro quo for most of us on the board. I don't know that I need targeted training on something like that, but if you could send the brochure or, link or whatever, I'll take a look at it. But the majority of the board members don't have an issue with that, even the appearance of that.
Okay. Well, Peter, maybe you could get some more details on the specifics of the training and get it out to the board members. What the timing is, and what the what the curriculum is, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah. Okay. I'll follow up and provide more details to the board, whatever I can get my hands on.
Okay. Any other discussion on that first bullet point? Okay. How about legal counsel selection, timeline, and process, Peter?
Okay, so I have, when I met and interviewed both Senator Torgerson, who was the previous board chair, and I interviewed the previous executive director, they both independently, they were separate interviews, they both really hit on the idea that we needed to obtain our legal counsel as soon as possible in the process, that the earlier we bring them into the process, the more involved they can be in the decisions that the board makes from the beginning of the process, the more effective they can be in defending the board's action during the litigation phase of the project. So they both just hammer on that. You need to get your counsel lined up as quickly as you can. So I feel like one of the top priorities for me is to figure out how to facilitate that process. You know, this is we're again a very odd situation in that the Constitution, the redistricting board clauses specifically state that the board shall employ or contract for services of independent legal counsel. And so this is a mandated option for, you know, we have to do this. And we'll talk a little bit more about procurement later, but there's likely going to be an RFP process involved. I spoke with a legislative purchasing officer about this. He indicated that at a minimum, it's a 45-day process. And practically speaking, it's usually more like 60 days. So, you know, even if we had an RFP out at the beginning of January, which, you know, that probably won't happen, but, you know, as soon as possible, if we started January 1st, we're still looking at essentially March 1st before we would be ready to, you know, make a selection and enter into a relationship with a firm. And that process, of course, is not only going to involve writing an RFP and publishing an RFP, but then the board's going to need to meet to interview attorneys from various respondent firms. And that process, of course, is going to take some time. So I'm advocating that we begin that RFP crafting process pretty much right away and get the ball rolling on that.
Peter, this is Bethany. I had a question. Peter, have you had a discussion with Jill yet, the chair of the Redistricting Planning Committee? I know at one point, I believe that she had a draft of an RFI, and the intent for the Redistricting Planning Committee was to put that out there to start getting, you know, those, so we could identify those folks who would be interested in responding to an RFP that the board would eventually do. But I don't know whether she ever finished that or not. Have you had a discussion with her about that?
Thank you, Bethany. No, I have not actually spoken with Jill. I have spoken with Jill in the past, but not about this topic, and not in the recent past. So I'll reach out to her and see if she has a draft RFI, and perhaps that language has been hammered out. That would be a huge savings to us in time, for sure.
Mr. Chair, this is Melanie.
Yeah, go ahead, Melanie.
Thank you. I fully support getting the ball rolling in terms of getting an RFP out, or if there's an RFI. What I would like, given the small size of our staff, is to be involved in the hiring process. So I'm all for getting the RFPs out, but, you know, we're only going to have a handful of employees, and we're going to rely on them very heavily to make some very important decisions. So I would like, you know, to be involved as a board member, whether it's the whole board or a committee of the board, to be involved in the hiring process.
Okay, well, I think that makes good sense, Melanie. And I don't know about others. I would have envisioned it probably as a full board in terms of interviewing law firms. Right. I mean, maybe we could have a smaller group that depending on how big the respondent pool is, that screened them and brought a handful to the full board. But I think it is going to be a relationship between the full board and legal counsel. It's going to be an important one, and I think we should all be involved in the final decision for certain.
Yeah.
Other
clarify,
members?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Bud?
Yeah. I mean, I envisioned the full board being involved with that. I think it's an item of critical importance. And I guess I would assume that we would do something that's parallel to our selection of the executive director, where we put out the RFP or RFI and, you know, wait a given amount of time to see who has interest, probably independently, like we did with the executive director, you know, make a short list and you know, work that through the board and then conduct interviews of the short list applicants.
May I clarify, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, please. Go ahead, Peter.
Yeah, yes, board member. Yeah, there's no question that this is, in my mind, this is a decision it's only for the board, and it's a very personal decision. Senator Torgerson indicated that he felt that you needed to interview not only a couple representatives of the firm, but the actual attorneys who'd be tasked with defending the board's action. And my anticipation would be that the RFP would lead to a list of firms, and then I would facilitate meetings between the full board and each of those respondent firms and their representatives that would occur probably over a series of, some days, because there's going to be several, I assume, and I imagine it will be a lengthy interview process. So, yeah, I see my role in this legal counsel procurement as merely a facilitator for the board to interface and to become comfortable with whomever they may choose, and then just to basically handle the paperwork to make that happen.
Sounds like a reasonable course. I'm a little concerned about the timeline getting into March, but we can discuss that as well, too. But I agree with both Melanie and Bud and you, Peter, that it needs to be a full board decision. Any other thoughts, discussion on that topic? Okay, Peter, why don't you go over that organizational chart that was in the packet?
Sure.
And just to make sure, do all the board members have that in front of them? It's a pretty simple org chart, but
Mr. Chair, Melanie, I do. There's a typo right at the very top. I think it was supposed to be proposed.
Yeah, it's proposed. Yeah. Yeah. This is a draft conceptual. There's nothing firm about this in my mind, anyway. My initial thinking was to keep the staff as small as really possible to save cost. I was thinking, to bring aboard a deputy director fairly quickly so that there's some redundancy in the decision making and, there's more than one person who kind of knows what's going on. But then in speaking with Skiff about the process and his knowledge of the previous cycles, he said that each of the previous executive directors had done the same thing. They had started out with just two people, and then they ended up with three, and they tried to make it work with three, and they each ended up bringing on a fourth person right in the middle of the most intense period. In the middle of the cycle when we're drawing maps and public hearings, they would add a fourth person just because there was too much going on. They needed help, except now they're adding a person in the middle of the busiest time. So, the implication being that we may do well to bring on a third or fourth person sooner in the process so that we're not adding staff right at the last minute when things are really under pressure, when there's a lot of demand. So this org chart sort of reflects the full build-out, in sort of the most that I would see happening with five there. Now, whether we need a specific dedicated GIS technician is an open question in my mind. The software has matured a lot in 10 years, and it may well be that processes which in the past required very specific expertise are now automated enough that we don't actually need a GIS person. So that's what I mean when I say this is very just conceptual. And in reality, I think once I spend some time with the software and working with Census Bureau on how we're getting the data through, it may be clear that we don't actually need a person dedicated to that. Or if we do, maybe it makes more sense to have a subcontractor who just, you know, bills us an hourly rate, shows up for a day or two here or there, or a week as needed, but doesn't incur the full cost of an employee relationship. So I'm certainly not looking to hire four people right away. It could build out this way. I do definitely want to avoid, though, being understaffed when we're right at our most critical point, when the public testimony phase is at its height after we've adopted or in the process of adopting a draft plan. And after we've adopted a draft plan, we'll have numerous public hearings about that, and that we'll need staff to assist just with the logistics of those events. So that's my thinking at this moment on the staffing idea.
Mr. Chair, this is Melanie.
Yeah, Melanie.
So I think there are two things missing from the proposed redistricting staffing org chart. The planning committee had recommended at our very first meeting that we hire a redistricting consultant who's an expert in redistricting, and our attorney should also be on the org chart, and both should be tied in right in terms of who they report to. Those both should be reporting to the board. And then I know we're not on the budget part yet. We're talking about staffing, but given the fact that the census will be coming out later than it normally does because of the pandemic, I want to make sure that we have the resources and don't end up like the last redistricting board short. So as session starts, I'd like to make sure that the legislature and the administration is aware that we might need additional resources to carry staffing through the end of this process. And I'd like to include two additions to the redistricting board consultant and the attorney, and have them show as directly reporting to the board.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay. Yeah. All right. Go ahead, Peter.
Yeah, Melanie, I appreciate that. I would like to clarify for the public record, however, that I'm not proposing that either the attorney or a census expert would have an employee relationship with the board. The firm will be a contracted firm, and we will not incur any employee-style costs with them. It'll just be a contracted amount. And likewise with the census experts, if and when that time comes, I would envision contracting with some expert who also works for many other states in addition to us, because they're an expert and recognized in the field. And so they would have a contractual relationship, and that would be a board decision. And yes, of course, they would report to the board, but they would not. I want to clarify that neither of those would be an employee relationship, at least as my understanding is right now, how they would be structured.
Mr. Chair, this is Melanie.
Yeah, go ahead, Melanie.
Yep, I appreciate that they wouldn't be, employees, but this chart is showing reporting structure, and I just want to make it clear and for transparency purposes that we will have independent consultants who work for the board, report to the board, and if it's not on this personnel chart, this is an org chart, I want the public to be fully aware of who all is involved in this process.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. I'm happy to add them to the chart. Yeah.
Yeah, this is really the staff, you know, the employees, but certainly, you know, you can put another little line to attorneys and consultants off the board if you'd I think that's just fine. I don't have any problem with that. Anybody else?
Oh, yeah.
Any comments on that?
Mr. Chair, this is Melanie. Can Peter please respond to my second part of my last comment? I want to make sure that, you know, we and obviously our executive director, feel confident that we're going to have the financial resources to be adequately staffed and cover all the costs of our consultants, given the extended nature of this process during this, because the census is going to be coming out late because of the pandemic. And what is his plan going forward to ensure that we don't fall short with the budget? I want to make sure that he's supported, we're supported going forward. We all know that it's going to be an extended process.
Yes, through the chair. I am keenly aware of the situation with our financing. I spoke with members of Senate Finance, the Senate Finance Committee, I guess it would have been about March. And, of course, COVID was just starting to emerge then. We didn't know what the impacts were going to be. But I made it very clear to the legislators at the time that this was going to be an extended process, at least to plan for at least 3 years, and that the legal costs in the last cycle accounted for about 50% of the total expenditure of the redistricting board, and that those legal costs were impossible to foresee. They may be much greater than last cycle. They may be less, and that we would be returning, whoever the redistricting board chose to send to Juneau would be returning each year with an appropriations request that might increase substantially from the original $2.5 million per year. Now, that $2.5 million number came because the last cycle, the total cost was about $7.5 million. I don't have my hands on those exact numbers yet, but it was about $7.5 million last cycle. And so $2.5 million for the first of a three-year cycle seemed like a starting point that was the most accurate we could possibly do, and we'll talk about that budget in more details. But I am keenly aware of that and expect to be working closely with the board as we reach out to legislators in this coming appropriation cycle to be sure we have the resources we need.
Mr. Chair, this is Melanie again. I'm sorry to be taking up so much time, but I appreciate you putting together this proposed budget, Peter. I would like to see the backup behind it, the breakdown, and I would expect that would be part of the public record as well. You've got, a component for activities, hearing, travel, but I don't see how many trips. Just the details behind this budget I would expect to be able to see, so I'm not prepared to approve this. We have a total allocation provided by the legislature. But I'd like to see a more detailed budget breakdown, and I know you've just started, so you'll need some time to develop that, but I can't approve a budget today without seeing the budget detail.
Yeah, Melanie, just for a point of clarification, there's no action anticipated on any of these items. This really is just for information and just to really begin the discussion, just as we're having here between the board and Peter, so that we have a better understanding of it. He can get feedback like you've just given him, which is great. And then I would see that he will start to work. He comes to work Monday. That's when he starts, can start putting together the details of this and start getting them out to board members, and then we can start to look at the breakdown of all these items and make some decisions based on what the timing is, how much time we have left in the fiscal year, what the anticipated needs are going to be of the board, how different aspects of COVID have changed things. There'll probably be a lot less travel than was anticipated a year ago, many different changes. So I think Peter will start to sink his teeth into it next week, and then the board will be fully informed and participate in whatever the decisions are before we approve a budget. And certainly from the public's perspective, everything that we do is open and available to the public, not only through the course of our meetings, but if any of the public is interested in any aspect of what we budget or spend money on, they're certainly entitled to all that information.
Mr. Chair, this is Bud.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, you bet, Melanie. Yeah, go ahead, Bud.
in terms of both staffing and budgeting, because of the expected delay in receiving the census material, it seems like a lot of that can kind of be pushed back at least several months, simply as a budgeting and cost-saving measure. In other words, we don't need to fully staff up right now. We don't need to have as many meetings or anything else that causes expenditures until, seems to me, we get closer. I'm not saying we shouldn't be preparing. I'm not saying we should not proceed with finding legal counsel, because I think that's a critical step right now. But I'm just saying, I think through the watchful eye of our executive director, we should be able to kind of avoid some of these, particularly personnel expenses, early on and save some budget money that way.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay. Go ahead, Peter.
Yeah, I would just add to that. Bud hinted at it, but it's certainly true that because of the census delay, we are likely to carry over a substantial portion of our original $2.5 million appropriation this fiscal year, because the fiscal year ends June 30th, and we may not have census data until sometime in June. I mean, we don't know, but so I would anticipate this cycle that just because of COVID, we end up with a carryover from our original appropriation. But assuming that the board chooses to ask me to work with legislators and whoever else on appropriations, I would communicate clearly to the legislature that this carryover does not reflect a lack of any duties that were performed. It's simply a matter of pushing the calendar back, and that our appropriation would likely be the same or perhaps greater than 2.5 in coming years as needed. So that's a message I'll be certain to communicate to the legislature.
Mr. Chairman, this is Bethany.
Yeah, Bethany.
Peter, as part of the, when you discuss things with Jill, as part of the redistricting planning committee, you probably knew that we had a budget of, I believe it was $250,000 from the legislature and $50,000 from the governor's office. And some of the things that you have noted on the budget here were already purchased with those funds, or like, for example, the furniture and such was procured through goodness, what is that called? Excess furniture that they had. You know, they have storage that, you know, when things aren't being used, I can't remember the exact terminology for that. But, you know, we do have desks for nearly everybody. There'll be a few cubicles needed, but I think that there's all but one chair. There's one of those large format, you know, printers. You know, the laptops that have been paid for. So some of that, just kind of keep that in mind as you're putting that together. And I'm sure Jill can provide you those details, but some of that has already been paid for out of the RPC fund.
I've taken note of that. Thank you.
Well, I think this is a good discussion on that topic in terms of timing and how we proceed as a board. As Bud notes, the census and others have noted that the census data is likely to be delayed into the summer, June, possibly July. We just don't know when that's going to be forthcoming, but one date that's not changing is November of 2022, when the next election cycle is. And that I think it should be a goal of ours to have the process done and through the legal review in time to have the plan ready for 2022 election cycle. So I think we want to be prepared to the greatest extent that we can when we do get the census data, that we put our plan together as quickly as possible, get it out to the public and hopefully reviewed by the courts and in place in time for the November 2022 election cycle.
Good point.
Okay, well, we've kind of touched on the org chart and developing the budget. Any other further comment or thoughts on those two items? Okay, Peter, how about establishing board policies? Can you kind of walk through some of that with us?
Sure. Now, there's, of course, the board may choose to adopt any number of policies, but there's a few that are sort of on my radar even now at the early stages. And I'll just briefly run through those, and if one by one, if board members have questions or thoughts to share, that'd be helpful. You know, we are sort of operating under the legislative umbrella right now, and just a brief context, in the 2000 cycle, the Legislative Affairs Agency was in a similar relationship with the board where they provided support. That changed in the 2000 cycle. I'm not clear on why, but the governor's office ended up handling the accounting and so forth. But this year,
Peter, let me just interrupt. I think you got those backwards. In 2000, it was under LAA, and then 2010
correct.
Under the governor's office.
Correct.
Yeah, okay,
that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So we're back now. The legislature clearly, appropriated the money such that we're under the legislative umbrella again, and so. I think formally adopting the legislative procurement code probably makes sense for us, although obviously I'm open to, you know, discussion on that. But that would just formally put us in a clear legal standing with how we handle procurement. For legal counsel, for example, we could then use all of those rules. And so I would, ask the board to consider adopting the legislative procurement code or we could use the administrative procurement code if we chose. But the legislative one, since we're working with their personnel, they're most familiar with those regulations, and it seems to me like that. I can find no downside to doing that. Perhaps members have other thoughts. But so that's one policy we may consider making fairly soon.
Mr. Chair, this is
Melanie. Yeah, Melanie?
You'll have to forgive my ignorance since I'm not, a career politician or having worked for politicians, I would like to see, the differences between both procurement codes before I even say I'm interested in going that route. This packet, because of some kind of an error, we didn't receive until, mine showed up 5 minutes after the meeting was supposed to start, and it basically just has the agenda and this org chart with a typo and a very large basic budget with no budget backup. I thought we were primarily going to be discussing a personnel issue. So I'm not prepared to, I appreciate your bringing this up as a heads up, I guess, Peter, but I'm not familiar enough with either code, and I like to do my homework and look at things before I consider things. And I hope that's noted for the future because, like I said, I thought we were primarily going to be discussing one issue today. So I'd like us to, note that you are recommending that we consider one code over the other, but I'd like to see both codes, have the difference between the two explained to me, and then I'll feel like I can make an informed decision.
Mr. Chair, this is Bethany.
Yeah, Bethany.
Hi. Also with the RPC, we went through that same process, Melanie, and so I think it would be helpful to you. So, Peter, when you talk with Jill, she can refer you to, we had one of the attorneys come in and give us a basic breakdown of the differences between the two different procurement codes. We chose to use the legislature's, even though we were majority made up of governor appointees, we just, for various reasons, it made more sense to use the legislative procurement code. But that was all documented as part of the RPC minutes, and I'm sure that same individual could probably come and brief us, as Melanie had requested, in a future meeting.
Thanks, Bethany. And again, we don't anticipate taking any action on this. I just thought it was good to have a discussion, Melanie, on some of these items just so that we can start thinking about them. And I'm certain that Peter can get us the full packets of all the different aspects of each of the different routes we could go through the legislative or the state. And then I think that's a great idea, Bethany, to bring in somebody that can kind of walk us through that too, after we've had a chance to review all that, study it on our own. There's nothing pressing, I don't think, about this decision when we make it. So I think Peter can maybe schedule a meeting when we can spend some more time specifically on it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, to respond to that, I would say the thing that is most pressing about it would be the process for hiring outside counsel, which, of course, is a long process, but, you know, we would need to have that in place, I believe.
Well, that's a good point. If we're going to start down the road of an RFP or an RFI, we will need to make that. Well, why don't we do this? I don't want to make a decision on it at this board meeting. Maybe we can get that information pulled together quickly starting Monday, get it out to board members, review what the RPC did, and maybe pull that together quickly, and maybe next week sometime. Well, what's the board's feeling? You want to try and get together before the holiday, before Christmas, and try and take action on the procurement code or the policies, or wait till after the holidays?
Mr. Chair, this is Melanie. I would appreciate, you know, at least 5 days to review anything that's put before me for decision making. I do have next week scheduled off, but I can meet if needed. But I would like 5 days to review anything heavy.
Okay, well, 5 days would put us after Christmas then, between Christmas and New Year's. And I don't have a problem with that. Any other thoughts from other board members?
Mr. Chair, this is Bud.
Go ahead, Bud.
Yeah, I think Peter could put together the response to this question, which is, you know, basically what are the differences and what's involved in the two different procurement processes, and get that out to us early next week so we could have a normal opportunity to review it, and then we can schedule a follow-up discussion. At the same time, we could be working on just developing the language based on what the planning committee put together for the RFP for the legal counsel. So those two things could be going on concurrently, so that by the time we have the language for the RFP, we know which procurement policy to proceed under.
I think that makes good sense.
Okay, I've made
Melanie,
that.
Melanie, does that sound reasonable to you?
Mr. Chair, that does. I just want to have some time to prepare before I'm asked to make decisions. And I don't mind working over the holidays or weekends.
So what do board members think of having another meeting then the week of the 28th? Maybe either the 28th, 29th, or 30th. That'll give Peter, if he can get it out to us next Monday, all that information. That'll give us a full week to digest it, and then the following week come back and be prepared to take action.
Mr. Chair, this is Nicole. I can do the 28th and 29th, but not the 30th.
Okay. Others?
It's going to depend on the time for me. I can give Peter my schedule.
Okay, why don't we have Peter, why don't we shoot for that, the 28th or 29th, and then we'll have Peter reach out to all the board members rather than trying to do it over teleconference and see if we can find a time that we can all get together. Okay, well, is there anything else on that topic? If not, let's go to item five, which is other personnel matters, some of which may be discussed in executive session. I know we wanted to talk about the process through which we hired the executive director, and then also hopefully discuss deputy directors as well, and just kind of open it up to the board members and see if you want to go into executive session and discuss some of these matters, or if you want to discuss them in open session. And I also did put an item six, board member comments. If there are comments after we come out of executive session that board members want to put on the record or discuss.
Mr. Chair, this is Melanie. I move to go into executive session for the purpose of discussing personnel matters.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, motion made by Melanie and seconded by Bud to move into executive session to discuss personnel matters. Is there a discussion on the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing none, we're going to move into executive session, and we, just for members of the public that may be online, we anticipate coming out of executive session. I really don't have an idea of how long it would take. I would guess that it wouldn't be more than an hour. And we'll come back on to the record when we're done, ask for any board member comments, and then if there's nothing else before the board, we'll adjourn. So I would ask the teleconference operator, Danaya, if she can, do we call back in, Danaya, or are you able to restrict this to the executive director and board members?
Hi, John. You guys can stay on the line. I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording and the live stream, and then we'll let you know when you're good to go, okay?
Okay, for members of the public who may want to listen into the back portion of the meeting after we come out, is there a way to contact them, Danaya, to let them know that we're going to be coming back on the public record?
Well, not really. I can pull them out into a private session right now and get their phone numbers. There's just a couple of them. So if you want to give me a moment to do that.
Yes, I would appreciate that if you could.
Okay, sure. Just one moment.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, while she's doing that, I'm wondering, you know how we were able to do, I can't remember if it was Teams or Zoom, for future distance meetings, I'm wondering if we can revert to that. It was so much more helpful to me to be able to see people's facial expressions. And like Bud said earlier, knowing when we're not going to talk over one another, it's got that feature where you can raise your hand. I think it would help you, you know, chair the meeting better. I'm wondering if that can be pursued as an option for us.
Definitely.
And
I agree.
Still have it available to the public. And to also still have it available to the public. I don't know if technology is that far advanced yet or not, where we can have, you know, redistricting board meetings over Zoom or Microsoft Teams or something, but still have access by the public.
I think it works. I think we can do that, Melanie, and I agree with you. Absolutely. And we'll get Peter to organize that and figure out how to do all that. And let's plan on our meeting, if we're able to pull it together for the 28th or 29th, to do just that, having a video conference rather than just a teleconference.
I've made a note of that, Mr. Chairman.
I think the Teams, Zoom seems to work. That's the one that I usually use. Teams, that's when we did the interview process, and I think that's what the Legislative Affairs Agency uses. And as I recall, Tim mentioning that they used that because they felt there was a little higher level of security in that and not as easy for outsiders to hack into it somehow. So, but I'll leave that to you, Peter, to figure all that out and what makes the most sense for us.
Okay, I'll do some research.
Not as easy for outsiders to.
And then as soon as Danea comes back on the line and has the contact information for those who are listening in, we can begin an executive session.
Okay, John?
Yes.
This is Danea. I was able to talk to one of the people that were online, and the other one I could not get to respond.
Okay.
So I do have their number, and I will give them a call as soon as they're going back in. I will text you in a moment when you're ready to go into your executive session, okay?
Okay, that sounds good. That sounds like a good plan. Thanks.
Okay.
I'll stand by for your text. Thank you.
Okay, one moment. John, this is Danae.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Danae.
We're just waiting for one person to call in, and they're calling in right now to listen, and I'll give you the go-ahead in just a sec, okay?
Okay, great. Appreciate it. And
you're
thanks
welcome.
For your patience, too, Danae. We really appreciate you on a Saturday spending so much time.
Thank you. No problem at all. Just a moment. Okay, John, you are ready to go.
Okay, real good. Well, thank you, Danae. We're now out of executive session and back on the public record. And first, my apologies to the public for taking so much time in executive session. I don't believe we would normally expect to be this long. And apologies for that. But we've strived as a board, really, to come together, achieve consensus, work together, and sometimes that takes a bit of time, just like in many families where you try and work to come to a consensus on things. And so it is taking time for us to learn each other and get to know each other and trust each other and come to a consensus on issues. So I don't anticipate any action coming between now and adjournment. We do have a section for board member comments, and I would ask if there's any comments from board members. Okay, hearing none, and let me also thank Danae, too, for coming in on a Saturday and spending so much time. That's much appreciated, and the legislative staff that helps put all this together, or legislative affairs agency staff that puts all this together. So that's much appreciated. And my thanks to our fellow board members as well for taking the time on a Saturday to come together. With that, if there's no board member comments, I would look for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second.
Okay, motion made by Bud and seconded by Melanie to adjourn. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing none, the redistricting board is adjourned, and it's about 1:45. Thank you all.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Your host is exiting the conference.